With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It's time to play like a Jet with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Denzel Mims with another monster score of 70 yards.
Quick pass to Crowder, trying to get him out of space. Slows a tackle, and there he goes. It's a foot race, and Crowder is in there! A 69-yard touchdown.
Takes a shot.
Here's Corey Davis, wide open. Davis, still going, and he's in for the touchdown.
Hill hit immediately.
He got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And it's time for part two, the weekend mailbag. So for that, we bring in the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. So let's jump right back into the mailbag. Next question comes in from my friend Mike Mulhern, who's a producer over at NBC Sports Philadelphia. So he's not a Jets fan. And asking this from a non-Jets fan point of view, he says, I know you're all aboard the Wilson Express. He's talking to me, not you, Chris, because obviously you're on the Trey Lance Express. But say the Jaguars somehow said they would trade you the number one overall pick if you were Joe Douglas. What's the most you'd be willing to give up to move up to that spot to get Lawrence? A friend of mine asked me this, and I'm curious. I said number two, number 23, and the Seahawks 2022 first. Bear in mind, I'm not very big on Wilson. Honestly, I think at this point, I would probably just stay there and draft Zach Wilson. I know that Trevor Lawrence is obviously the top prospect in this draft, and I like Trevor Lawrence. And if I had my choice between the two, I would take Trevor Lawrence. But that's a lot to give up, considering that I do think very highly of Zach Wilson. I'd probably just stay at two, take Wilson, and that would be the end of it. I don't think I would be giving up multiple first-round picks to move up one spot. If you think there's an insane difference between the two, then that's another story. Chris, I know that you would prefer Trey Lance, so we'll make this about Lance or Fields or whoever it is that you would prefer to pick at number two. If you had the opportunity to jump from number two to number one, what would you be willing to give up?
Not a lot. Like, and that's not a lot. And even if you just keep it with Wilson there, not a lot at all. Like even giving up one of those thirds would hurt. I would do it, but I'm not giving up a lot of those picks for somebody who I just think that this is the other thing that about Lawrence is what I love about Lawrence is how low his floor is. But if we're just projecting ceilings, I think Lance, Wilson, and Fields all have higher ceilings or more likely to hit a higher ceiling, I should say. So I don't know that I would be I would give up much. I don't even know if I'd give up one of those thirds to do it. I'd give up one of those thirds to do it. All right. But third, fifth, so I'm not – I'll tell you this much. Even if the Jags were willing to do it, which we know they're not, but let's just hypothetically say they were, I'm not willing to give up enough to get it done, I don't think. I don't think I'd be willing up to get enough to get it done.
Next question comes in from Fergus Bob. He says, is Wilson going to be the pick at number two because he's viewed as another Mahomes Allen type who's from a small school and succeeded in the NFL, so he should too? Is this the reason Fields' stock has dropped so much? Or is it because Ohio State quarterbacks haven't had a good history of doing well in the NFL? I think there's a variety of different things in play. A lot of it comes down to people didn't pay much attention to BYU during the regular season. And then when everybody goes through the tape, they see things in a much more finer light. What I personally like about Zach Wilson is the fact that he's really good at a lot of the important things. His work ethic in terms of just his insane desire to constantly get better and better and better, and his obsession with football, which is sort of Tom Brady-like. And I'm not saying he's going to be Tom Brady. I'm just saying that his obsession with the game is on that level with Tom Brady is something I like a lot. The off-platform, out-of-structure ability is good. The fact that he can really read defense as well pre-snap and even post-snap is really good. Being able to manipulate guys with his eyes is very important. The ability to make plays in and out of the pocket. Just his ability to read a defense, though, is really important to me in the processing, because we've seen so many quarterbacks here with the Jets in the last couple of tries that they've taken a quarterback: Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez, Sam Darnold, Bryce Petty, Christian Hackenberg, that they haven't been able to read defenses. So to be able to get a guy who can read defenses, at least on a collegiate level, is a really important thing to me. As far as Fields dropping, I think part of it is we get to the point of draft season where people overanalyze these guys, and then they start to pick up on flaws and magnify them. I do think that the Ohio State thing plays into it a little bit, because as Chris has talked about before, it's sort of that Marcus Mariota phenomenon. You're not entirely sure what he's capable and what he isn't capable of, just because that system makes things a lot easier. What you saw from him, you largely liked, but there are questions in terms of how does that project at the next level? He could be awesome at it, but he might not be, and we don't know for sure. So I think there's a lot of that at play here. I don't think that Wilson Rising has anything to do with Josh Allen. It really has more to do with the fact that when you watch his tape, he's just really dynamic. But this is not to say that you're right or wrong to have Wilson or Fields above one or the other. We'll find out who's the better quarterback as their careers progress. But if somebody has Wilson above Fields, that would be a big part of the reason why all the stuff that I just said. And I think that both guys are really good prospects, and most people recognize that. I do think it is weird, though, that because so many people are dug in and entrenched on who they like better, that it's gotten to the point where instead of just saying, hey, I think both guys are really good, but I like Wilson over Fields, or I like Fields over Wilson, it becomes Wilson's awesome, Fields sucks, or Fields is awesome and Wilson sucks. When the truth is, both guys are really good prospects. And then Trey Lance, same thing, different type of prospect, a lot more raw, but I don't think you have to necessarily think he stinks or he's awesome and the other guys stink or they're awesome. It's okay to think that there's more than one really good quarterback prospect that the Jets will have available to them at number two.
One thing I want to start before I fully answer this is we need to eliminate the idea of where people are just like, oh, nobody heard of Zach Wilson before this year. Why does this keep getting brought up? This is how it works. Like, nobody, unless you're, you know, Connor Rogers or somebody who your job is to follow the draft, there's every year there's one or two quarterbacks who pop up who weren't on the majority of people's radars the year before.
Chris, if I could jump in for a quick second here, just to give some examples, Joe Burrow came out of absolutely nowhere. Baker Mayfield was a guy that people thought maybe could be a day three draft pick when that season started in 2018. He ended up winning the Heisman Trophy and going first overall. Carson Wentz was somebody that people thought might be a second or third round sleeper, and then all of a sudden he rose all the way up to the number two overall pick. So just to add to your point, it doesn't matter that a guy wasn't on people's radars to start the season. Sometimes there are guys that work in reverse. They're on everybody's radar to start the season, and people think that they're going to be a potential top prospect, and then they just do a complete nosedive. We saw that with Brad Kaya a few years ago, where going into the season, people thought he could be a top 10 pick, ended up going in the seventh round. So it works both ways. And just to bolster your point, I don't understand why people let that influence them one way or the other.
Yeah, and to bolster it even more, Patrick Mahomes, because even his last year, people, even after the season was complete, people weren't like, hey, this guy is guaranteed. Like, people didn't know. And when the Chiefs traded up to get him, there was a lot of people like, who's this dude? I never heard of him, because they weren't watching Texas Tech games. And I've watched a lot of Texas Tech football in my life. I don't blame you for not watching them. So I think we need to just get rid of that whole thing. Just, oh, you didn't hear about him before this year. That's a weird complaint to me. But as far as what it's a ton of different things. Yes, if you watch Zach Wilson, go ahead and throw on any tape of Zach Wilson, it's going to be hard, borderline impossible to not see some Mahomes-ish stuff there. But that's more style of play thing. I don't think there's anybody that's watching him and playing and being like, yep, we guaranteed we got Patrick Mahomes now. But he's really good at a lot of the same stuff that Mahomes is. So there's got to be some of that you get caught up in, and all of us. Like, part of the reason why I do like Wilson is probably a large part of that reminding me. It probably plays a little bit more of a role in my thinking about it than I, you know, am aware of. With Fields, I think a lot of the idea of Fields, like, falling down and stuff, it's really tough to gauge, because I feel like a lot of it is smoke. Mm-hmm. Chris Mortensen did something about his throwing motion the other day, and I was just like, what are you even talking about?
To be fair to Chris Mortensen, if you watched the full clip, because it was clipped before he got all the way through, he did go on to say that there were other people that played baseball and had that throwing motion that did end up succeeding. So I just want to be fair to Mortensen there. And then, Chris, just to add on to your point about it being smoke, so many people have brought this up about it being agent speak. In fact, Mike Farrell talked about this, and he's somebody that's seen every trick in the book, every swerve and counter swerve. Remember, he's been a national recruiting director for Rivals for over 25 years. He said, when you hear about Fields and you hear people talk about his work ethic, or you hear people talk about his processing or being a one-read guy, these are just teams trying to drive his stock down so that they have a chance to draft him. I wouldn't be surprised if some of that is coming from New England, honestly.
Yeah, well, listen, New England has a history of doing this. Mm-hmm. So that's – teams will do that. So, like – and it's one of the most annoying parts of the draft process, because you hear it and then I get frustrated by it and annoyed, and I'm like, what are these people thinking? And I get all riled up, and then it takes me a couple of seconds to be like, oh, wait, they're probably just doing this, pumping out this smoke on purpose. And we all fall for it and go right into getting aggravated about it. But now all of a sudden, you go look at live betting odds, and Justin Fields is the heavy, heavy favorite to be the third overall pick now. So I think that a lot of that is just smoke. But yeah, it's with Wilson, you're seeing a lot of the Mahomes stuff, but it's not like, oh, this guy reminds me of Mahomes, so we're taking him. It's just, this guy has a lot of stuff that works in 2021 NFL. This guy has a lot of things that will help us be an explosive offense in 2021 NFL. It's way more that than it, and they just, he just happens to share traits with Mahomes than it is somebody watching it and being like, we got the next Patrick Mahomes. They just share similar traits that work really well in 2021 NFL.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Next question comes in from Michael Palace. He says, is doubling up on interior offensive line at 23 and 34 a bad strategy for Douglas and Saleh? Also, could you see Douglas trading up for a target like Elijah Vera Tucker? We talked about this earlier. I could definitely see Douglas trading up a couple spots for somebody like Tucker or Tevin Jenkins. And no, I don't think doubling up on interior offensive line would be a bad strategy, depending on who the guys are. If they really like, say, Creed Humphrey and Wyatt Davis, or even getting a guy like Tucker or Tevin Jenkins and using them on the interior of the offensive line year one, and then transitioning them to right tackle year two, and then grabbing, say, Creed Humphrey or Wyatt Davis or Landon Dickerson at 34, or if they trade down in the second round, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I have zero problem with it. I think it would, in fact, be an excellent strategy. The only problem with it is I don't know that the players are going to be available for them to do that. That's the thing that would stop me from thinking that it's going to happen. Again, I said I don't think Elijah Barrett Tucker is going to be there, but if he is, I would say that would be the pick. So that complicates it. But I don't. But absolutely, yeah. If you can do that, you can bolster two of the inside spots. Go for it. Absolutely, go ahead and do it. I have no problem with it. I think it would be really, really smart. You know, of course, it'll depend on who else is on board. But if you can get two offensive line in there, yeah, absolutely go for it. I think that's what if they come away with two inside or two offensive line with that second and third pick, I think that's probably would be, like, depending on who they are, almost best case scenario, because that's the most important thing they got to get fixed and figured out for Zach Wilson and for this offense. And if you can build an actual legit good offensive line from to have on week one, that's going to go a long way to helping Zach Wilson, helping the running game, and helping every single thing out.
Next question comes in from Butchie O'Dwyer. He says, what's going on with Cam Clark? I think they drafted Cam Clark assuming that he would be a redshirt and then he might be a possibility to start year number two. But you've got a new coaching staff in here and they're not going to be able to know what they think of him until they actually see him in training camp. I think he'll get a chance to win a job at guard, but he's going to have to impress the new staff. There's no tape for them to look at unless they're going to look at practice tape from last year because he didn't play. They're not going to make any determination of him based on his tape at UNC Charlotte. So really, he's in a holding pattern. I don't think that he's going to influence their decision to draft interior offensive line. I think he'll get an opportunity in training camp, but I don't think that there's really anything going on with him right now other than we're waiting to see what the new coaching staff thinks of him when they get a look at him.
All right, this is how I would suggest looking at it. Right now, Cam Clark is not even on the roster. After the draft, the Jets will have 11 draft picks. One of those draft picks will be Cam Clark. He's coming into, like you said, a new system, a new offensive coach. It's starting all over for him. Everything that happened last year, he got his little familiarity with the offense, with the NFL, knows his way around the building and all that. But for all intents and purposes, he is going to be coming into this building next at the start off training activities as a new guy. His new coach, his position coach, his offensive coordinator, they'll all be new. And so he's basically just going to be an extra draft pick right now. They drafted him as a developmental guy, and now this is year one all over again. He's going to have to go and prove himself to this coaching staff. But Joe Douglas is definitely not sitting there saying, hey, we're going to be good with Cam Clark. They're going to look to upgrade the offensive line still, and if in training camp Cam Clark shows that he deserves some playing time, then that's what will happen. But he has to come in day one and start proving himself all over again, because it's a whole new staff he's got to sell on his ability.
Next question comes in from Joe Horning. He says, hey Scott, and the very big deal with the emphasis on blocking wide receivers, would you say the Jets are going to focus more on speed at the running back position to get them to the edge? Or with Wilson being similar to Rodgers, run more of a Green Bay-style offense and target a guy like Sermon, who's a bigger running back? Could go either way. I think that they're likely to try and get a guy who has speed. If I were to guess, I think somebody like Kenny Gainwell makes a lot of sense for Memphis. Very shifty. And I know that the Jets have spoken to him more than once. I wouldn't be surprised if they go in either direction, though. They know they need help at running back. But if I were to guess, I'd say speed would definitely be high on the list of things that they'll be looking for in a running back this year.
Yeah, this is one of the things I talked about a couple weeks ago on here. As we don't exactly know here. This offense is going to be an offshoot of the Shanahan offensive system. Is it going to be like his brother's offense is? is going to go in a slightly different way? Is he just going to basically do an exact clone of Shanahan? These are the things we have to wait and see on where we're going to have to. He's almost certainly going to think, see things a little different and want to do things a little different than Kyle Shanahan does. But we don't have the answers to that yet. We have to wait and see. I would think that there'd probably be a little bit more of an emphasis on speed in that wide zone getting out there. But it's going to depend, and we'll wait and see. There's going to be players there. It's not a position that I think if they were to just go in with what they have now, they'd be perfectly okay doing that. But I would expect them to go with someone like Gainwell or a Kylan Hill in those, like, you know, somewhere in the third, fourth, fifth. But yeah, they're gonna need to have a certain amount of speed to go get into that wide zone. But we're gonna have to wait and see exactly what the brother LaFleur wants to do, and exactly is it going to be more like his brother's, or is he going to go off in a even different direction from the Shanahan offshoot there?
That's going to wrap up part two of the mailbag. Make sure that you follow Chris on Twitter at CNimbly and at Jets Insider, and read his very big deal work at jetsinsider.com. And check out everything we're doing at playlikeajet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. Luke Grant has some videos up breaking down some of the top prospects in the NFL draft that the Jets might be considering at number 23 or maybe even number 34. Kayla Pace has the latest episode of Pace's Playbook up, where she talks about the possibility of the Jets drafting Zach Wilson from BYU and whether or not that's a good idea. Don't forget to catch Play Like a Jet live every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock in conjunction with U Stadium. Luke Grant and Clayton Smarslock will take you through that. We got a very special guest lined up for this coming Wednesday, so we'll have an announcement about that shortly. And if you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet, if you could go ahead and do that for us, really appreciate it. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take you much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and PlayLikeAJet.com.